Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Mark Moffitt, who did his doctorate under Harvard conservationist E.O. Wilson. In grad school, Mark figured out photography to document his ant research, leading to his first National Geographic article. He's a widely traveled tropical explorer who's currently studying the life and death of societies. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Awesome. How are you doing, Mark?
Great. Thank you. So great to have you.
Yeah, so good to hear your voice, Mark. I'm really looking forward to what kinds of neat tools you have for us.
Hey, Kevin, I know you're loaded with neat tools, so I'll just try to compete as best as I can.
No competition here. Just tell us what you love.
Well, you know, I mentioned a few things, and one of them I guess I'll go right into is fairly basic, and that is a 5-minute epoxy and needle and thread. I carry with them those things with me everywhere. And I do it because I actually modify everything I buy or build. Everything I have has little modifications all over it. So even for cameras, I will immobilize any button that might cause me problems. You know, something you never use, you suddenly press and it screws up your photography. I'll just use a very tiny amount of epoxy. You better test it first. I'm not saying you should just go out and do this right away, but any button I don't want to move, I make sure it doesn't move.
That's amazing.
And 5-minute epoxy, getting into the tools itself, there's these versions where there's kind of two bottles. There's also a version where there's two little cylinders and one push rod that seems a little smaller. I'm just imagining you toting around, you know, a pint of epoxy in your backpack. Do you have small versions of this? Do you have a particular brand that you like?
Well, you know, I really can't claim to be sure because I buy them in various places. You know, I pick it up in Singapore or wherever I'm going. I travel a lot of spots. So I will just say, because it will probably cause me trouble with your listeners if I mention the wrong one, that they should test whatever they do themselves. But the little combined two cylinders that are together are easier to carry.
And why epoxy versus not CA super glue? I carry a little tube of that, and for most purposes, that's probably maybe even better.
You know, I carry those two. I find that those kind of crack easily, so that, you know, if your camera bounces against something else, that button will start moving again or something. So again, I'm not going to be too specific about brands, but I carry both and I play with both, you know. And as for needle and thread, you know, I'm always modifying my pants to, you know, I put a zipper in the front pocket. You can get some nice things from Scotty Vest or Rail Riders with zippers in the back pocket and passport zippers. But I put a zipper in the front pocket and a button below that. And I've had people try to get past that, you know, when I've been on a crowded bus traveling somewhere. And they get past the zipper, and they never get past the button. So I'm playing with stuff all over my place. My briefcase computer bag has got modified little crevices for all kinds of little things, and my wallet is always attached to my belt by a strap, camera strap.
That's smart.
That old camera strap that I use, so I'm never losing my wallet. So all these little modifications are the story of my life.
That's super smart. Do you have pictures anywhere of all your modified garments and bags and things like that?
No, I can't give it. These are secrets. Everybody has to come up with their own. No, darn it.
So the idea is, you want, I mean, and obviously you do you have a couple little tools that you travel with as well, a screwdriver or Leatherman? What do you travel with, particularly in the days of the TSA and all that kind of security? What do you do for a knife?
Man.
Do you buy one when you arrive or what?
Swiss Army knives are, I've lost several of them over the years. I always forget. It's terrible. You know, I always like the Explorer Swiss Army knife that has everything in it. It has a little magnifier, it has scissors, it has a leather reamer, all those things, but I've lost two or three of them. So, you know, if I'm going on a big trip again, I'll pick one up. But what I particularly do now, I'm an entomologist. I'm looking for small creatures. So if anybody out there likes bugs and whatnot, you might appreciate this. I use a belt bag, an Arisen Universal Organizer, a previous generation of the one they're selling now, but that's what it's called. And I have in there my waterproof notebook, a mechanical pencil, a Bausch & Lomb loop, you know, high magnification, 20x, to look at all the tiny critters I want to. There's something called a featherweight forceps you can get so you can pick up bugs without bothering them. A little tape measure, and even a mask. Here's something. I was ahead of my time. I always make a mask to put over my face because I find that I'm studying army ants, and the army ants get really annoyed at you if you breathe on them. So I've been doing this mask thing for years. It's all part of my, you know, how I'm seen when I'm traveling is with this mask on, looking at bugs, which is great because everyone leaves me alone. You look a little bit insane, you know, and you get a lot of elbow room to work without anyone bothering you.
So the Universal Organizer, which is basically, this is something that you carry on your belt. It's for the belt people who carry the tools on their belt. The chief question I have about it is, does it fit in reading glasses? Can you put in a pair of glasses? Because that seems to be the thing.
Yeah. Well, I like the smallest possible one, but even so, the ones nowadays, you know, hold a cell phone and therefore a pair of glasses. You know, with all the little bits I put in there for bugs, I don't know if you have room for the glasses or not. But I like most of these belt bags are too big. I want something that's never in my way that can have there constantly because when I'm walking around in the tropics and there's a bug flying to a light at night outside my restaurant, I want to be able to reach in and grab my little featherweight forceps or an aspirator, which you use for breathing. You can suck in insects without touching them. I want to be able to grab that, have them handy without having a belt bag that's in my way when I'm sitting down and so forth. So they're as small as possible, but still big enough for, I think, your reading glasses.
And your phone and your little tools. And so what else do you carry when you're out sort of looking? Are there anything else? What else do you put in this little organizer besides the ones you mentioned?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I mentioned a little tape measure, just a meter or two. I carry, you know, this is me. I study army ants and other ants. So this is not something the average person may want. But I have little vials of sugar or oil. Some ants are sweet tooths, and some ants are just, you know, they want cooking oil, high energy cooking oil. So I put a little dab of that on the ground. You know, I'm the one guy who wants more ants to come, not less. And flagging is really fun. You know, you travel a lot there, Kevin, and you know, you see something in the middle of the jungle and you want to get back to it. A little strip of pink flagging, so you can just tie something on to a tree, run back, get your camera, and find out where you were. That's really useful.
That's a great idea. Great
idea.
So
this bag is also, it's cheap. It's only like $12, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and you know, it's as simple and easy as possible, mostly just waterproof and nothing too noteworthy. I don't want to be, I'm often traveling on the cheap. I don't like to make a big scene. You know, I've done stories for National Geographic, and I was once in Borneo sitting at a little restaurant dive somewhere, and another National Geographic photographer was going by, and I didn't even get up. I probably should have introduced myself, but he had like 12 people packing his camera gear, and I'm going like, I could never take pictures that way because things would get away. You have to be able to grab your camera and take your picture when the action happens. And so I strip things down, make them very simple. I'm not into a lot of gear, just good gear and things that work for me. And as I say, I modify them a lot to make them work.
So speaking of great gear, you have on your list here the Canon Macro Twin Light Flash, which is, tell us about it.
Well, figured out how to take photographs of ants when I was in graduate school. So I became an expert on photographing small insects. And, you know, that was in the 80s and before this particular flash was developed. So I actually put together something that ended up working a lot like this flash does. And I figured this out by trying to replicate studio lighting for a supermodel. You know, if you look at a book on how to photograph a supermodel, you need light banks with a main light and a fill light and a hair light. And so you have to picture your ant, your little ant or little insect, your little beetle as Naomi Campbell and ask how she's going to look. And if an ant is, if Naomi Campbell was the size of an ant, your flashes have to be in really close and they have to be diffuse. They can't be strong. So I developed the system with two flashes that I was able to attach to my camera, with angle irons and on a pipe clamp. And those flashes were really cheap and they would electrocute me all the time. But now Canon has come up with this macro twin light and Nikon has their own version of it. And it's two little flashes that attach to the front of the lens, pretty much in the right spot, for getting, you know, their supermodel lighting. You have to make a few modifications of them. You know, as I say, I modify everything. So, what I would say, if I was going to advise folks, you always use the regular macro lens, that 50 or 60 millimeter Canon 60 millimeter is their standard lens. Pretty cheap, only like $300. And never the 100 millimeter macro because that gets you too far away. You can't get the lights to have that big effect on your Naomi Campbell insect when the subject is that far away, even a few inches away. So, and you don't want a ring light because that just makes things flat and bland. And it also, the ring light has, the part of the ring goes down below the flash, so it keeps you from getting low. And believe it or not, if you're photographing an ant, you gotta get down to the level of an ant, which means even being an inch or two from the ground essentially means you're like several stories up tall in an ant-sized building looking down at the ant. You have to actually be down in the mud directly looking at the ant. So you have to be flat on with these two little flashes, and this macro twin light does it perfectly.
Can you use the macro twin light for photographing other close-up things? Does it work if you were doing, I don't know, jewelry or mushrooms or miniature things that you make?
Yeah, a little, anything below what you call life size, you know, an inch or so. So beetles, smaller insects, once you get a little bit bigger than that, you have to get the flash a little bit farther out away from the axis of the lens. And you can buy a little modification of that, a little extension arm to put the flash out an inch or two. But all these things should be attached to your camera, because the point is, too many people, when they're trying to photograph flowers, small flowers or other things, are assembling all the stuff, or they have stuff that stands out in all these awkward directions. And my goal to do National Geographic stories or other behavior is to be able to grab the camera, fling it around, and photograph the action as it happens. You shouldn't have to pause. That means you shouldn't have to assemble anything. Everything is put together. The studio is built into your lens with this particular flash unit. The only thing you can add to it is a hair light, you know, that glow that gets the supermodel's hair looking so great, which means a little flash from behind. And I get a little tiny flash, the cheapest one possible, with a little flash sink on it that I can just hand hold behind. I just throw it behind with my hand and get a little light on the, and make those ants look glamorous, or beetles, or small butterflies, or even larger butterflies if you do it right. All these things are great for flowers and insects. The only reason to use a ring light is when you want something to look as flat as possible, to take out the dimensions. So usually, like, you know, if you're collecting stamps, you want that. But everything else, including jewelry and so forth, you're going to get better pictures using these little double flashes.
That's really cool. Okay. So here's another, you have another tool suggested for us, also related to travel. It's actually one that I own because I'm there with you. It's this portable clothesline. What do you call it?
Well, the brand I had was Flexoline, and These are great because it takes up no space. And as I say, I'm very efficient with space. You just pull it across the shower or across the space in your room. And, you know, I'm one for washing clothes in the sink. I was a graduate student, spent months in India for part of my trip. And I would just go down to the river and do what all the people do in the river and take my underwear and everything else and slam it against a rock with a whipping snap. And it was like echo through the valley, cleaning your clothes that way. But it really does clean your clothes pretty fast. And so, in some of the places we go, Kevin, you know, you're not going to find a laundromat or someone to clean things for you. So I would just I do a couple pieces of laundry at night. And this particular Flexo line is made out of it's like a twirled rubber band. So you don't need any clothespins. You can just stick your clothes into these little twirls in the rubber and they stay there until they dry. And so I find that very effective.
Right, It's sort of a stretchy rubber. It's a braided, three braided rubber strands or two that you elastate between two hooks. And often in some parts of the world, there may even be hooks in the bathroom for such things. And or if not, you can usually find somewhere. And then that stretched rubber thing is braided, and in between each little braid, if you open it up, it forms a natural clamp on the clothes that you're trying to hang, socks or underwear, whatever, which is the usual thing you may be doing the laundry every night of. And then it's drying, and then you take it down, and it's weighs ounces and packs anywhere, and you have a portable clothesline.
Yeah, exactly. And you actually mentioned one other thing I always bring with me. I'm used to staying. No, I've stayed at some of the best hotels in the world on the right trips, but other trips, you know, you're kind of struggling to find a place where they even know how to clean your sheets, and it's something else. And so I actually bring my own hooks, you know, and I will with those little peel-off backs where you can put them on the wall so you can hang up some of your clothes, because some of them don't have any hangers in right. the or anything. So I bring some of those.
Yeah, the brand I recommend are the 3M, I think they're called Compact, I don't remember. And the advantage of those are is that you can actually, there's a way of unsticking them at the end when you're done. So actually I take them down just as a courtesy. But I use these hooks because I always travel with mosquito netting, which I set up, and there is often four corners that I need. And I can find a couple corners, but they're often corners that I need to add. And I'll put these hooks up temporarily, and they're very, very strong, and they won't mar the finish. So I can actually remove them without marring the wall at all. They're made that way. And so I could use – they'll take a weight. You could hang laundry on them if you wanted to. But those are really, really great for traveling.
Oh, yeah. Well, obviously, we're two kindred spirits on our traveling techniques. I will add that when I'm going to a real rough little hotel somewhere, I do a couple other things. I buy a desk lamp because it's really annoying to be in a hotel where you have to get up in the dark to turn off the ceiling light. And besides the ceiling light, in some places, you know, in the remote spots can be like a 10-watt bulb, so you can't even read by it. So I'll get a cheap desk lamp somewhere.
Another like thing at a, that, like at a little store in town or something?
Yeah, everyone usually has those, so it's no point in usually buying one, though, in advance, I mean. But, yeah, another thing cheap hotels lack is a trash can the size larger than a half of an apple. So sometimes I'll bring something to put trash in. We Americans generate, or at least photographer Americans generate more trash than the average person, I guess. And another thing is the doorstop wedge. No one's trying to do harm, but you know, in remote places, the people's sense of privacy sometimes isn't as the same as ours. So I like to have my door firmly closed, and I'll just put a little wedge there. I forget the brand, but there's even now a little hotel, cheap hotel alternative keys you can buy. that fixes the lock a little more thoroughly.
Yeah, I haven't. But the door wedge is interesting because it would not take up much weight or space. These are great travel hacks. You had one bonus for us. And what is that?
Oh, I mean, I had a couple of potential bonuses there, but my favorite is one I learned from a guy named Ted Poppenfuss. And Ted is at the University of California, Berkeley, and he's a herpetologist, looks for snakes and whatnot traveling around. And, you know, I've been with him in Iran, and we were nearly kidnapped once. The only reason our group wasn't kidnapped is that we were running late, and a group of Italians that passed where we were supposed to be got kidnapped instead.
Oh my God.
And, yeah, I wrote about this as a Smithsonian article once, and we were all like dismayed that we weren't kidnapped, because the kidnappers apparently took people up into the mountains where they could collect fabulous lizards and ants and everything else, and fed people really well. So we would have been doing much better than we did. And in fact, that Iran trip was quite something, because there were five biologists from Berkeley and about 15 Iranians that came with us, and we didn't know who the Iranians were or what they did. They all seemed to be some kind of secret government people. And every time we had to stop and, you know, take a pee, all of them had to get out and get on their cell phones. So anytime we had to stop, there was an hour's delay. So we were greatly pained trying to hold ourselves for the duration of these trips. And I will just say my friend, Jim Patton, who studies rats, he's the world rat expert, once got so annoyed at this that during one of these stops, he walked out into the desert in Iran, and he got smaller and smaller, like that scene in Dr. Zhivago. And then in the distance, I could hear him scream, "F the Ayatollah, F the Ayatollah." And then he slowly walked back like the other scene in Lawrence of Arabia and got on the bus and was very quiet. But, you know, Mr. Skippy was Ted Poppenfuss's favorite gizmo, and it's basically Skippy peanut butter. And he'd get that and bring along a large jar of it just to break down social barriers with folks.
Is he giving the bottle, or is he opening up and sticking his finger in and saying, "Here, lick this," or how does it work?
Well, you know, with the way he did it, and I followed suit in a couple of my own trips, is take a large bottle and get a spoon and let people try it out, because it's just this fun way of introducing folks to something a little foreign and American, because you're showing up at a place looking like a Martian. And Ted particularly works in places with troubled government, so he's actually trained the Taliban in Afghanistan how to catch lizards. You're dealing with people who are finding you very bizarre and, you know, a little suspect, and you're breaking down the barrier. Nothing like peanut butter for doing that. It's cheap. It travels well. And, you know, if all else fails, you can eat it yourself.
And do most people not have any idea what it is, or they kind of they've heard of it? Or I've never really thought about peanut butter as a social lubricant. What are most people's preconceptions of it?
In places we're talking about, you know, I've been to places, and perhaps you have too, where people look at your skin and they're trying to pull on the hairs on your arm because it couldn't possibly be that they're that weird shape and color. So people are so flabbergasted with you that it just provides a way of communicating with someone without really. You know, they would have no idea, I think, what it is in most cases. There's usually not a conversation about it, because usually we're dealing with folks who don't speak English. Mm-hmm. So it just becomes a way of having fun. And then Ted would convince them to go out and get toads for like a tenth of a penny a piece. And then the next day, people would come up with several hundred toads, which is far more than were actually necessary. So you have to be careful about your exchange rates. That's all I'm saying about that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So, Mark, we'd like to hear about a current project you're working on, a recent book, where people can go to find out more about you. What are you excited about these days?
Well, you know, my main reason to be excited was that I was supposed to get out in the field this year. You know, I was supposed to be on the Ivory Coast looking for chimpanzees right now. So it's kind of an anti-excited moment for me, darn it. Here I am mm-hmm. in front of my computer because I've been in front of the computer now for about 6 or 7 years writing a book on societies and looking at societies across different species and how societies function and how they stay together over the time and what causes them to break apart when they do fall apart. So I have actually been, you know, I'm an expert on ants, and but I've looked now across different animals and in humans to how societies actually function and work, and there are actually surprising parallels going on. And my basic view is that societies are about identity, how in-groups and out-group form, even in animals. So Jane Goodall famously was looking at chimpanzees in Gombe early on, and everything seemed all hunky-dory, and everyone was basically getting along. There were some struggles among the top males, but that's kind of normal. And then 1 year, they suddenly started killing each other, and it turned out her particular society or community of chimpanzees had split into two, and friends have become foreigners. And it's kind of parallel to what we see in humans when we no longer feel that we're belonging to the same group. And it's the kind of stress that humans experience, you know, and we're experiencing in different parts of the world now. And it has its parallels in animals that have never been looked at. So I'm a funny guy. I don't like to be serious, but I'm now dealing with this serious subject.
And this is all in your book, The Human Swarm, which is now available. We'll have a link to that. I think it's a great book. I've read it. It's you might not think ants and insects and weird little critters have much to teach us, but they actually do have a lot to say to us, how we organize. And I think that's the kind of stuff that you deal with in this book, which I highly recommend, The Human Swarm.
Yeah, I just ordered it myself.
Yeah. And it's obviously you're a great storyteller, Mark. You have some great stories in this one, and a lot of very factual, detailed knowledge about how insect societies work and what we might learn from them. So I recommend people get to it, and we'll have links to your website, drbugs.com.
Thanks so much, Kevin. Yeah. I know you gave me a strong endorsement for the book, and I've appreciated that. And, you know, we'll get down in the dirt ourselves sometime.
Because
we
will.
I'll
lay in the ground with you while you show me how to photograph little tiny insects. So, Mark, thanks again for joining us, sharing your tools and your stories. It was really fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Hey, Mark. Thanks.
Hey, everybody. It's your host, Mark, and I wanted to thank you for listening to the Cool Tools Show. And I also wanted to let you know that we've got a lot more going on at Cool Tools than just this podcast. We also have the Cool Tools website, which has a new tool review every day. And you can get there by going to cool-tools.org. We also have 4 different newsletters that you can subscribe to, and you can subscribe to those from the Cool Tools page. We have this podcast that you're listening to right now. We also have a YouTube channel where we review tools. Check that YouTube channel out by going to youtube.com/cooltools. And one of the things I'd like to ask you is, if you're really enjoying everything that we are producing, go to our Patreon page and support us there. You can sign up and give us as little as $1 a month, and that would mean a lot to us. The money that we get from Patreon goes towards a lot of things. We transcribe our podcast interviews so that you can read them online. We pay for editing of our podcasts and for our videos. We pay our contributors. We have video production costs. We have equipment costs. We have hosting costs. And the money you give us through Patreon also goes to support Cool Tools Lab. Anything you give is a huge help. And one of the things that we do is, if you are a contributor to Patreon, we'll give you a shout out on air. And so I have a few people here to thank this week. Mark Lyonage, Micah Gates, Monty Zukowski, Patrick James McNally, Robert Cohen, Scott, Spence Lloyd, Steve Avery, Steve Golden, Steve Levine, Tom Hess, William Phillips, Aaron Nipper, Dharab Patel, Glenn Mercer, Jay Walker, Jeff Bonair, Ryan Jarrell, Pat Daly, Patrick Kennedy, Troy Wallett, Mike Camerate, Nicole Harkin, Tim Youssef, Scott Reed. Thanks all of you for supporting Cool Tools. And if you would like to have a shout out, go over to the Patreon page and sign up. And thanks for listening to the Cool Tools podcast. We'll see you next week.